You're listening to the LifeScan Learning Lab edition of the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie and co-host Todd LaDuc, episode 53.
Welcome to the Get Balanced podcast with Dr. Donnie. If you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or emergency medical professional who would like to improve your family relationships, your physical and mental health, and want to have success at work and at home, well, this show is for you. Welcome to the Get Balanced program. Let's get started.
Hey, folks, this is Dr. Donnie, and I am telling you I'm excited that the Get Balanced podcast has an official sponsor, and I want to tell you a little bit about them. And it is FirstNet, built with the AT&T. And what I want to tell you about them is probably part of it is that many of you already know this, but for first responders and frontline workers, communication, as we know, is not a luxury, but it's a lifesaver. And that's why FirstNet, built with AT&T, was created. Now, the FirstNet mission is to make communication faster, safer, and more collaborative for first responders and other public safety personnel. FirstNet helps first responders and frontline workers connect when they are on and off duty. They get access to priority and preemption capabilities. This means they connect to the network first. In emergency situations, first responders move to the front of the line to access critical bandwidth they need to send and receive, whether it's voice, data, video, images, and text. Now, during an emergency, FirstNet is a critical connection between first responders to technology and also to each other, giving them access to information quickly and when every second counts. With FirstNet, first responders and frontline workers get a highly secure, reliable network with 24/7, 365 customer care and monitoring. Now, to get more information about FirstNet, go visit your local AT&T store or visit firstnet.com. Now, let me go in and introduce our guest for this week. Thanks for joining us on the Get Balanced podcast, the special edition, which is the LifeScan Learning Lab edition with my co-host, Todd LaDuc, and our special guest. Actually, I'm going to kick it over to you, Todd, to introduce our guest today.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate, again, here we are with another episode, collaborating and tremendous feedback we've had so far with the podcast episodes. Last week, we had Chief Reggie Freeman, dear friend, and now the Oakland Fire Chief. The week before was Dr. Lori Moore Merrill. And I'm thrilled to have Deputy Chief Steve Brabinski from Santa Clara County Fire. And Steve, I hope I didn't butcher your, I always have trouble with your last name. It's I've known you for so long, but I always still get it, never get 100%.
Why do you think I kicked the introduction over to you?
I know. but Steve, all kidding aside, Steve's been not only a colleague, but a friend. I've had the honor, actually, of spending some time at Santa Clara County as one of the peer review team members during their accreditation process. And they have a phenomenal department. Got a perimeter tour, the secrecy of the Apple headquarters. We couldn't get too close, but great organization, great people, and Steve's doing great things inside and outside the organization. So couldn't be more thrilled to have you on today. And I thought we'd just start, Steve, by, you know, I'm sure many of our listeners know you, but maybe don't know your career path. And I know you started, like most of us did, fairly young in your journey into the fire service. So maybe if you could touch a little bit on how you ended up in the fire service and your journey to where you are today.
Well, thank you very much, Todd. Thank you very much, Donnie. Honored to be on here today as well. And, you know, it's been an amazing career. I've been in the fire service for going on 30 years right now, currently serving as Deputy Chief of Training with Santa Clara County Fire. And when you talk about what got me into the fire service, you know, I didn't have any family members that were in the fire service like many. I mean, I had some family friends that were in the fire service, and like many others in the fire department today, I was really piqued. My interest was piqued by, you know, seeing the fire engines drive by. And I grew up in the city of San Leandro, just south of Oakland, where Chief Freeman's at. And thankfully, because of some family friends, I had some, you know, connections that I went down on a regular basis to visit the fire department. So I really got that taste early. And it really wasn't until I was probably halfway through my 4-year degree at Cal State Hayward that I really decided to take the path seriously. So when I finished up my 4-year degree, 6.5 years into it, but hey, finishing is good no matter what, but I finished up what I started. But anyway, then I took it seriously by looking at, you know what, this is what I got to do. And at the time in the early 90s, when I was testing to become a firefighter, the common theme, at least in the San Francisco Bay Area, was get your EMT, get your Firefighter One Academy, and then maybe go to paramedic school if that wasn't working. And over the course of about 4.5 years, the time it took me to become a full-time firefighter, you know, I was doing all those things, but it wasn't until I really got my paramedic that I realized that was pretty much the ticket in the door, as it was, and even to this day still is, at least in California. I know many parts of the country, but 4.5 years of testing, and I'm very fortunate to be where I'm at today. Had a chance to, you know, be a student firefighter with the City of Oakland Fire Department, a work experience program through Chabot College, where I still teach at 30 years later, Explorer Firefighter with Alameda, and then obviously got my first part-time position up in Sacramento at the Elk Grove, which is now the Cosumnes Fire Department. Did that for about 1.5 years, and then been very fortunate to be going on 25.5 years with Santa Clara County Fire. So had a great ride, about 5 years as firefighter, about 5 years as captain, about 5 years as battalion chief, and now I've been deputy chief for 10 years. And I, you know, would not change anything the way things are scripted. So I'm very fortunate to have a great, great career path and get a chance to meet many people like yourselves and, you know, be involved in a lot of good things. So that's a little bit about myself and a short story there, but very fortunate to be where I'm at today and get a chance to continue paying it forward and giving back.
For sure. And you know, you touched on, I think what a lot of us kind of went through is that infectious process that, you know, we put our big toe in the water. And, you know, for many of us, it just immediately became a passion and a calling. And, you know, they say, if you love what you're doing, you'll never work a day in your life. And, you know, obviously it's not for everyone. But I know, having followed, your service and your career, you've had a passion, and you actually touched on what I was wanted to maybe pivot and talk a little bit about, as well as you mentioned on giving back and paying it forward. And you do a lot of work outside the organization as well, and trying to help and grow and mentor future leaders within the fire service. And I know sometimes, I'm sure like myself, I forget what city I'm in or what state I'm in, but I know you've got that map that I see you have posted on all the different states that you've touched and the few that I'm sure you will. But why don't you talk a little bit about some of the work that you do in traveling the country, in helping grow future leaders. And I think there's a lot of lessons in there that we can take away for those that are listening that perhaps are in the service or considering the service and are looking to advance their career.
Well, thank you for that. I have a phrase that I like to use, you know, when I talk about passion. You know, my passion is basically helping people get hired, helping people stay hired, helping people get promoted, and then helping people stay promoted, as well as ultimately then enjoying hopefully a nice, long, healthy retirement. And when I talk about the getting hired and getting promoted, that's one thing, but I'll touch on my passion that I'm at today is I see a lot of people get the positions, whether it's the entry-level positions, the promoter positions, but then for some reason struggle to keep those positions. That's where it gets into not just getting the position, but also staying the position while being the best that you can be. You know, I was fortunate, as I mentioned, to be on the Chabot College instructional staff for about almost 30 years now. When I was finished up the EMT program in the Firefighter Academy, I got a chance to work as a volunteer, helping as a skills instructor, just to put some experience in my resume, anything I could do to try to help, you know, up my game to make myself a marketable candidate. And eventually that turned into a part-time teaching gig at the college, which I, like I said, been doing to this day, one night a week. Just the passion that I see with those entry-level students, because that's my main class right now, is the intro to fire class. So I get a chance to see those hungry wannabe firefighters like I was at 30 years ago and many of us were at. And that's what keeps me going. And then as I touch on what I'm able to do as well too, travel the country and share my passion. And, you know, it's not just officer development, because, you know, to me, the term leader applies to all ranks, not just the promoted ranks, but the firefighter ranks. So I have a phrase that I've been using, courage under fire leadership. And the reason I call it courage under fire leadership, because I think you look at all the leadership traits that are required of anyone today, fire service, private industry, governmental industry, courage is probably one of those biggest things that anyone needs to be a good, successful leader. Anyone can be a leader, but you got to have courage. And after watching a presentation by District Chief Michael McNamee, Worcester Fire Department. Worcester Fire lost 6 of their members December 3rd, 1999. And it wasn't until after I listened to his passionate discussion about what he did that night. He had 6 firefighters die on his watch. Nobody ever wants to have 1, let alone 6. But on the flip side, he also saved probably an extra 15 plus members from dying that night. They could have had a really, really bad day of probably 20 plus people when you look back at the history of the cold storage warehouse fire. And when I sat through that, I'm thinking to myself, that takes courage to be able to not just know that you lost 6 members, but to also be able to say, stop, I'm not going to lose any more. Because the, you know, that balancing point of, you know what, the lives that are up there right now, they've been up there too long, that risk assessment and survivability profiling, which is very challenging to do. But to me, he's the epitome of courage under fire, because that was not an easy decision. When I was a battalion chief, I don't know if I would have been able to make that decision. I might have bowed to peer pressure, because he had all his, you know, type A personality firefighters and captains wanting to kick his butt and throw him down and get up there to rescue their brothers. And that's a great attitude that we're fortunate to have in the fire service. It's great that we have the type A personalities that are willing to go risk their lives. But there comes that point of knowing when to say when, of, you know what, someone's got to call it. And that's, to me, a true leader. And that's just one example of courage under fire leadership, because I also transcended into not just the fire ground, but also the firehouse, but also our day-to-day operations, because we have to be aggressive in what we do. I mean, there's an expectation from the public that they're expecting us to go in. We took the oath of office to risk our lives, and that's what we're here for, because nobody else is going to do it. But there's also that balancing part of risking our lives, going in aggressively to do a search, but also knowing when to say when, but also providing the best possible service that we can, not just for the community, but also for those that we're fortunate to lead and serve and work alongside. So while I am fortunate to teach at the entry level and hopefully and have inspired and motivated countless candidates, that I know I'm getting old when I'm hearing former students of mine becoming battalion chiefs and even a fire chief recently. I'm like, God, I'm getting old when I'm hearing that, but that's a good thing. But also being able to touch the careers of many that are on the job, you know, in that way, because I like to, there's a term that I heard recently was career and life-altering events. And that's sort of my passion, is preventing and reducing career and life-altering events. And that can be line of duty deaths, people that have been fired because of things they've done or not done, you know, injuries, disabilities, illnesses, you know, and we talk about brotherhood all the time. And that's a great thing. Brotherhood, sisterhood, family. But true brotherhood and sisterhood is not enabling people. It's also being able to know when to say when and be that designated adult at times. So in a nutshell, to me, I've got the best of both worlds, not just working in the fire service, but also teaching the future leaders of the fire service at the entry level, but also around the country for those departments that are willing to have me out, spend some time with their members of all ranks. That's really a very fortunate thing. And you touched on, you know, 36 states. One of my goals is to be able to speak in all 50 states. And, you know, I'm up to 36 right now. And I never would have imagined that years ago, being able to be in that position, sort of just the local thing. But you know what? I'm very fortunate and I don't take it for granted. So, you know, thank you for allowing me to at least share that as well, too.
Hey, Steve, I want to, I love that. And you got me thinking about when you say career and life altering events. Do you ever see that, or do you encourage it, such as if you see or teach leadership, you see a firefighter, you know that they're starting to spiral downwards when it comes to whether it's their the way they're taking care of themselves, whether it's the physical self, maybe it's drinking too much, or maybe it's not their family life is going downhill. So they're deciding, I'm just going to work more, you know, stay away from it, things like that. Do you see that career and life altering event style or philosophy of leadership getting in
touching on those areas?
Without a doubt, because like I said, sharing fire ground is probably 5% of what we do, or emergency scene operations. So much of what we do in the fire department is 24/7, 365 people. You know, we're around people in the firehouse. Even if we're a volunteer organization, we still have to be around people, whether it's responding to calls, doing training drills, and the whole health and wellness aspect, which ties in all the mental health and all the other things that you mentioned that usually go along with it, substance abuse, relationship challenges, relationship struggles, which also tie into the career or even as a volunteer into your job. You know, that to me is a big portion today in today's world, especially as we come out of COVID and into the new world where you can't just check your problems at the door. Life is about bringing things to the firehouse. And to me, that's where true brothers and sisters step up, is being able to recognize those situations, because, you know, the numbers are out there. Line of duty deaths, we know, are about give or take 90 to 100 a year, pretty constant. Suicides are double, if not more, at this point. Throw in the numbers of people that have substance abuse, depression issues, post-traumatic stress, other relationship challenges, and those numbers are just astronomically above that. And that to me is courage under fire. Leadership is being able to know the pulse of your brothers and sisters on the job and sometimes have those tough conversations. And I know, you know, our department has been fortunate, knock on wood, to not have a suicide yet, but one of our neighboring departments did, and it affected us in a lot of ways, because obviously we know the folks very well and we assisted them in many capacities. And it's those types of things that a lot of times we look back at the bad thing that has happened, and usually there's signs and symptoms. And when it comes down to it, a lot of people didn't, you know, they saw something was maybe bad was going to maybe happen, or they maybe had that gut instinct that, you know what, this isn't good. And in my experience, it always comes down to a lot of times people not raising their hand to maybe extend an olive branch, or, hey, how you doing? Anything going on? Can I help you with anything? Because either they didn't want to know, or they did want to know and they didn't. It's that crunchy time. And I think we can all do a better job of helping our brothers and sisters out. So without a doubt, long answer short, yes, we can do a better job there. And the stuff I do really hits on that as well.
Yeah.
Steve, you touched on some great points there. And I know for our listeners, you know, we want to help you get to your goal of all 50 states and help get the message out there for those incumbents as well as, you know, future leaders. What's the best way for someone to contact you if they're interested in the Courage Under Fire presentation?
Well, thank you for that. I'm on all the social media sites for the most part, but the easiest way is my website, which is simply put, code 3 fire training. So code 3, the number 3, or I think you can also spell it out. I got both those URLs, but code3firetraining.com, because if you try to spell in Przybrowski in your Google search, it'll probably lock up your computer and screw it up. code3firetraining.com, my contact information and my social media. But, you know, and it's, even if you don't want to have me out for a class, you know, I'm a resource out there, a lot of great free resources on my website. And if nothing else, an ear to bend if you have any questions, because I'm all about career development, officer development, leadership, and, you know, just connecting with others that have an interest in what we do to be better.
No, great, great stuff. And for those that are listening, I certainly highly encourage you to consider tapping into the chief's resources. Tremendous. You did touch on a topic that piqued, obviously, my passion, as you know, which is firefighter health and wellness. You know, I've, as many know, retired, believe it or not, this is my 2-year anniversary this month. Time flies, it seems like just yesterday. But now in my new role as Chief Strategy Officer for LifeScan Wellness Centers, I'm not sure if you you saw, we actually had a tremendous 36-year-old firefighter in Dan Eglishon's department, Albemarle County, a stage 3. Believe it or not, asymptomatic kidney cancer.
Wow.
That was just found on ultrasound imaging and had surgeries, back on the job.
Mm-hmm.
But I know Santa Clara recently partnered with us at LifeScan Wellness Centers to do your early detection annual physicals. And I think we've started that process and it's continuing. Yeah. But I was wondering if, and I know you had tremendous support from Chief Bowden, the mm-hmm. Fire Chief. Maybe if you could touch a little bit about that, and then I wanted to talk about your new book that you have out as well. So, but I wonder if you could talk about the importance of early detection and comprehensive physicals for your members.
Well, I'll be happy to. I'm very fortunate that we had the support of Chief Bowden and our command staff to take that next step, because I've been in my 10 years as deputy chief, I've been training chief for about 6 of those years. And, you know, we've been fortunate at County Fire, as long as I've been on the job, to have annual physical exams and really a caring administration that, you know, does as much as we could realistically do for our personnel. And we did that up to this last year, thinking we were doing the best. And when we were made available about what LifeScan Wellness had to offer, I think all of us were like, oh, wow, it seems like a no-brainer, because it takes the annual physicals that we were doing to the next level. And it's hard to understand until you've actually been through the shoes of one of the exams. And right now our cycle is pretty much, we just had you guys out here for 3 weeks in May and then coming back for 3 weeks in August. So I was fortunate to go through one of the exams in May, and, you know, it opened my eyes, you know, just for the ultrasound alone of all the benefits. And thankfully, clean bill of health, you know, knock on wood. But again, we don't know what we don't know. And like you mentioned, the asymptomatic part is the part that scares me. So the good news is I haven't heard of anything significant coming out of ours, but I know our members, our personnel, we know that it may happen with the thorough exams that are going to be occurring. And that's a good thing. And I think that's that part that, you know, we're not looking forward to having bad things be told to us, but on the flip side, if we can get early detection, more the better, especially given the line of work that we're in. So I was impressed just based on the thoroughness of the whole head to toe aspect of the ultrasound. I mean, obviously the hearing, the vision test, those were normal, that were done per NFPA, but especially the health and wellness aspect there. So I'm very glad that we seem very happy so far, at least up to this point. And I've heard a lot of good feedback from our members as well that have gone through it, saying, hey, wow, that was really thorough. Yeah, that's what it's supposed to be. So, you know, very excited for the future of what we have to offer and what you have to offer as we move forward and, you know, going into the future. So thank you for
that's great to hear. I was just at the the third annual National Cancer Symposium, and our mutual friend and president of Firefighter Cancer Network, Brian Frieders, was there. Yep. And really said one of the areas that we as a fire service need to do a better job at is tailoring our medical screenings to our occupational risk of firefighters. And that's what it all is all about. I mean, no one wants to hear you've got cancer. But if we have higher rates in the fire service, finding that out early is one of the keys to survival. So I'm glad you found it thorough. I'm glad you got a clean bill of health. Now you have a fantastic baseline. And I know I'm looking forward to coming out in September. We'll be exhibiting and doing exams at the California State Fire Chiefs meeting. So we're thrilled to have partners like Santa Clara and others in California, really on the cutting edge of trying to, you know, do the highest level of early detection for your troops. So thank you for what you all do. I want to touch not just because I was so humbled that you asked me to contribute, to your book, I mentioned it before we went on. I just loaned it to an up and coming captain, soon to be captain, with Palm Beach County Fire Rescue, prior to studying for their assessment center and testing. But you've got a new book out, and it's called 101 Tips to Ace Your Promotional Exam. You have a lot of pearls of wisdom in there from a lot of folks that probably are known throughout the fire service, and it's a great resource. I was wondering if you could just talk to us a little bit about your publishing and what you're hoping to accomplish with it, and this last one kind of being a collection of friends and colleagues really is intriguing, enticing, not just for me, but I think, you know, the person I loaned it to said it was a fantastic resource, and they just felt so much better prepared and at ease with their testing process. And so I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the plug there. And I like I said, I've been very fortunate to not just be in the fire service, but also had a passion for teaching and instructing. And over my course of my career, I've also had a passion for writing. And one of those things years ago, as I started writing, you know, just whoever would publish me, I'm more than happy to share my words of wisdom. And then, you know, fire engineering gave me an opportunity to get my first big print magazine in the fire service. And that was awesome back in 2004. Well, I've always had a collection of my thoughts and ideas for books. The hardest part I had was I can put stuff on paper, but I can't make it look nice and pretty in a book with all the pictures and everything else. So that's been my frustration, is I'm not a creative person. I'm in that way. But anyway, a number of years ago, a good mutual friend of ours, Rich Gassaway, back in 2012, because I had had hundreds of pages of manuscripts written for entry-level preparation, promotional preparation. And Rich was the one, we were at a conference, and he's like, and I was talking about getting, you know, self-publishing. That seemed to be a very phantom process at the time. And I thought it was impossible to ever get a publishing deal from anybody, because there wasn't a lot of these fire trade publishers out there. And it was one of those things where Rich is like, just self-publish them. And he gave me the contact information for one of the self-publishing companies he used. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go for it. And back in 2013, I put together two entry-level preparation books that are still out there off my website. And then another promotional preparation book, my first one, How to Excel at Promotional Exams. Well, anyway, those, you know, exceeded my expectations. And it was a random conversation about 2.5 years ago with someone from Fire Engineering Books and Videos. And I've been fortunate to have written many articles for Fire Engineering and been teaching at FDIC for probably about 14, 15 years. Know a lot of the folks obviously there. And one of their members from the Fire Engineering Books and Videos had reached out to me just on a random call asking me about one of the articles I'd recently published. Can I use some of that in a separate marketing thing? And I'm like, well, sure. And then we got talking, and I'd never met the individual before, but he's like, I go, hey, I got an idea for a fourth book. And he's like, you publish books, you know? And it's like, well, yeah. And, you know, and I just figured, what the heck, I'll throw it out there. And he's like, well, and he probably hears this all the time. And he goes, well, basically, are you starting from scratch? I go, no, I got a manuscript I'm happy to send you. And I sent my manuscript along with all my other published works. He didn't realize all the publishing that I had, not just self-published stuff, but magazines, all the speaking I had done. And he looked at the manuscript, he goes, I like this. And I got a contract like within about a day, which is like, holy moly, I never expected this from Fire Engineering Books and Videos. This is awesome. Well, I had put together my 101 tips based on my experience to build upon my previous book. Well, he actually had a great idea. He's like, well, how about we build upon this by maybe reaching out to many of your friends and mentors and colleagues, like, you know, like you, Todd, around the country, and have them contribute too. So I've got my 101 tips. And they're all broken up for different tips, because I'm not teaching you to pass the test by any means. I hate it when people, tell me how to pass the test. No, I'm going to prepare you for the position that you want. So I think that's the best candidates are the ones that prepare for the position, not to mention the position above the one they're going for. So it's really a leadership book if you look at it. You know, I was fortunate besides yourself. And I tried to look at people that had different subject matter expertise, like yourself touching on the health and wellness aspect. Billy Goldfeder writing some pages on the, you know, all the stuff that he does great with the firefighter close call stuff. Dave Dodson, who does all the reading smoke stuff. Dave offered some tips for the company officer, the chief officer, for reading smoke. You know, Ryan Pennington out of Charleston, West Virginia, hit on the hoarding for the company officer and the firefighters. You know, and a lot of my other friends, there's about 40 different people, you know, Dennis Rubin from the fire chief's perspective, what are you looking for in a captain, in a firefighter, in a battalion chief, and also from the lower ranks as a captain, what are you looking for in another captain or a battalion chief and your boss? So very fortunate to have a lot of folks, you know, Rich Gassaway touching on situational awareness. So that to me is the benefit that I was just to this day, very humbled that people would step up to the plate and share a page or two. Just to make it more value added for the reader. So it's not just my babbling. It's also, you know, words of wisdom from others there. So, you know, my hope is that I can do another leadership book with sort of the same concept out there in the future, if they're interested in doing that. So I'm just very happy to have this out there. And again, helping people just be better at their current ranks, as well as in maybe ranks that they maybe aspire to as well. So very cool project. Thank you for your involvement.
That's great. And it's a great resource. If you haven't had a chance to read it, I encourage you. I also encourage, I mean, the story you told about taking that first step into sharing what's in your mind, very similar. I talked about publishing for years. I'd written for Fire Engineering for years, and I just could never get a book off the plate. I called Bobby Halton one day, he pitched the same concept that Todd, you've got a lot of, mutual friends and talented folks that you know, and why don't we pull them all together and coordinate? And that's how Surviving the Fire Service came together. For those folks that are out there listening, especially, that have been on the job for any length of time and you have areas of expertise, don't consider it daunting about writing a book. I mean, sharing what's inside your head and your knowledge and your experience is really so beneficial to those that are on the job today and those that are looking to come on the job. So I thank you, Steve, for your leadership in publishing several of these resources. And I know that this won't be the last one as you gave us a sneak preview to maybe writing a leadership book as well. So we'll look forward to your next volume and endeavor. And that's the one thing, as long as I've known you, your desire and your heart and your passion about giving back and helping others. And that really, really shows. And I know you're making a difference. So a lot to be proud of.
Well, thank you, sir. And if I could just springboard on that one second. Now, I've actually got two Courage Under Fire leadership manuscripts in their hands that they're reviewing right now, two separate books. But just back to your point there about the inspiration that I hope bleeds off to others. When I was a brand new firefighter, I was looking at my instructors and I was, reading Fire Engineering magazine and going, man, one day it'd be nice to be able to, write an article, just not for the sake of patting yourself on the back, but being able to, share your perspective or teach a class because you see all the people teaching at FDIC when you look at the brochure. Naively, when I started out in the fire service, I always thought that I had to work for a big city fire department to have like the FDNY or the LAFD behind my name to get credibility. Because you look at a lot of those magazines or speakers are people from big city fire departments. And that was sort of maybe a drawback for me is like, well, and also I better wait, 20 years, 25 years on the job before I have a lot of experience to be able to offer because no one's going to want to care to listen to some guy with 5 years in the job or 10 years in the job. But again, thanks to wise mentors that have pretty much tapped me on the shoulder and said, we're all a subject matter expert in something. Find your expertise, whatever it is. You don't have to work for a big city fire department. It could be a one station fire department out in the middle of nowhere. You got to start somewhere. So you know what? Start somewhere by throwing your name out there and, sharing what you have. Don't wait until you're 20 years on the job because these are our golden years. Let's enjoy them and more importantly, give back. So I think that's a good message. Don't wait. I mean, now's the time for all of us to shine. It's our time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a good point. I'm a big believer in not recreating the wheel. If there's someone else out there that has already had that experience to learn from that individual. So as you point out, regardless of where you're at in your fire service journey, we all have something to offer. So sharing that with your colleagues and peers certainly is a great, not only give back, but it's also a great professional development tool. So, Steve, I want to be mindful time-wise. I know you've taken a chunk of time out of your day, and we're very appreciative for that. So I want to just offer you the opportunity, if there's any areas that we haven't touched on that you would like to, I certainly welcome that. And then I know Donnie's had you on once, and we've just scratched the surface on a number of the things that we wanted to touch on. So I'm sure we'll have you back on as a future guest as well.
Well, thank you. No, I appreciate the opportunity to be here and, again, try to be mindful of time. And although I talk a lot about career development, personal development, and obviously, leadership and so forth, tying it back to the whole health and wellness concept, balancing stuff, I think the good news about COVID, that's probably the best thing. And it's never too late to, I think, start making sure that we're taking care of ourselves so we can take care of others. Because I think as I look back at the pandemic and the challenges that we've all had in various forms and fashions this last year, the best thing that's come out of this is, at least, you know, besides teaching me tolerance and patience amongst many other things, or reinforcing things, actually not teaching me things. Those are, it's just the work-life balance, because, you know, we never know what the future holds for us, but, you know, yeah, it's nice to have a clean bill of health for the most part. I mean, I'm not perfect by any means, God forbid. It's, you go in front of anyone that's evaluating your medical background, it's like, yeah, you probably could eat a little better. You probably could work. I know, but, you know, I look back at this last year that it's really given me and my wife more perspective of, you know what, we have one life to live. Let's make sure we take care of ourselves. Not that we can make up for past years, because we can't. You know, I look at, you know, I think lost about almost 20 pounds in this last year just because of focused on portion control, as well as just balancing things out and trying to get a good solid workout plan in place, which years ago as a deputy chief being in the office for the last 10 years, got a workout facility 50 feet from my office at one, a really great facility, and 15 firehouses I can go to. And I was always work, which is not a bad thing, but work. Guess what? When I drop dead, somebody else will fill the spot and do it just as good, if not better job. So I think that's that message, that we're never too old, I think, to start recognizing that we got to take care of ourselves so we can take care of others. So again, to tie things in to what we're talking about today, I do thank you both for the opportunity. And again, definitely can't wait to see you both in person at some point as we move forward, and wish you both the best too.
Sounds great. And that, what a great message to conclude today's podcast on, you know, priorities and just putting things in perspective. So thanks for sharing that, Chief. And we look forward to, I'm sure our paths will cross sooner rather than later here shortly, and continue the great work you're doing. And we shall talk soon. Everyone, appreciate everyone's attendance today as well.
Thank you, guys.
Likewise. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate the gift of your time.
Hey, if you're a firefighter, law enforcement officer, or EMS professional who enjoys this podcast and would like some help with your work-life balance, you need to check out my Get Balance program. Not sure if you are balanced or not? Join me over at DonnieHutchinson.com and take the quiz. Together, we are going to get you balanced.